devotees become determined to study the Bhagavad Gita. They start at chapter 1, determinedly enter chapter 2, push their way through chapter 3, start getting bored at chapter 4, and if they're lucky, they finish chapter 6, and maybe 7, 8. But actually, and often, they don't really make it to the last 6 chapters in their determined study. So therefore, these last 6 chapters, I think, are the least understood by the devotees. And they're sort of hazy as to what they're about. Most devotees are hazy as to what these chapters are about. These chapters, in my opinion, especially 13 and 15, they're extremely exciting. So today, after having discussed 13 and 14 over the last 2 days, today we shall attempt to enter into the mysteries of the understanding of chapter 15, which is entitled The Yoga of the Supreme Person. So I had asked you to explain, after reading this chapter, about detachment, how to detach oneself from the material world. Yeah? Oh, I didn't mention it? Well, who read the chapter? Good, thank you very much. Those who read it, my thank you very much. Really appreciate how much you read it and prepared your consciousness for this. Thank you, Guru.
I feel the question that you asked about
I didn't program you properly for it, so therefore you didn't read it. But anyway, those who read it, anticipating the next day's classes, I appreciate very much. By the way, that's a teaching technique. You're strictly using positive reinforcement without saying. Very effective. You don't have to say anything negative at all, but it's huh? No. You need some attachment, but you need to know the technique. Wait a second. Just wait. Oh yes, we have to have detachment. Yes, that's the point about this chapter 15. Good point that you brought up, Clovis Brew. I like your way you bring up these relevant points at timely times. We appreciate it. Now, in understanding, we're gonna gather a frame of reference right now, okay? In chapter 13, or rather we'll even go back one step further. In chapter 12, who knows the topic about the basic topic in 2 words that chapter 12 is about? Very good. Thank you very much, Devaki. Chapter 12 is about devotional service. Now, chapter 13 discusses a lot of transcendental knowledge that if we perfect, we become situated in transcendental consciousness. That which keeps us in the material world is mentioned briefly in chapter 13, and that is Karanam bhunkte prakriti janiha, because of his tendency, the living entity's tendency to think he is Purusha and to try to enjoy the material world, prakriti janiha, karanam gunasangasya. That puts him in touch with the 3 modes of material nature, which entangle him in repeated birth after birth after birth after birth after birth. Now, when we drew our picture of the living entity entangled within the material body, we used the analogy of like a box, like a prison almost, that trapped the living entity within his field of activities and he couldn't get out. In chapter 14, the nature of the bars or the ropes that tie him up were described, and those were the modes of material nature. And there's 3 different varieties of ropes: goodness, passion, ignorance. Chapter 13 ended describing how to transcend. Now, when noticing the quality, 14 ended how to transcend. We're noticing the qualities of one who has transcended in the practice of knowledge. In one word, someone described it yesterday. What was the sort of the quality that strikes one about the consciousness and the vision of one who transcends? Because you answered it yesterday, if I remember, you gave the right answer yesterday, right? Didn't you? So let me.
There were two answers. One was equanimity.
Okay.
Detachment.
Yeah, because before one could, thank you, one could be equipoised through so many different, so much of the tumult of the material energy, one has to be detached. So on one hand, that which keeps us in the material world and entangles us, the glue that entangles us and keeps us fixed to the material energy, is our attachment, which really springs from our envy of Krishna's position as the enjoyer. But it's our attachment to material enjoyment in subtle and gross forms that keeps us in the material world and under the control of the three modes of material nature. If one is detached from everything to do with the material world, the modes of material nature cannot touch him. So chapter 15 opens or concludes the opening section, which is section A, if you pull out your sheets here, describes the nature of the entanglement of the soul with a different picture than we described it as the box picture, the prison picture. There's a different picture presenting. But the conclusion is that one should detach himself from the material world. We start with attachment, then we detach ourselves from the material world, and then we have to attach ourselves to Krishna in the spiritual world. So this is the process that's described as the yoga of the Supreme Person. So section A concludes really by talking about detachment. Section B describes the fruit of attachment. And what is that glorious fruit? That is transmigration, samsara, samsara dava. Who knows the place where the pastime, the name of the place where the pastime in Vrindavan took place, that Krishna swallowed the forest fire? Who knows that?
Dava-nala.
Right. Samsara Dava-nala. Dava-nala, where Krishna swallowed the forest fire, Dava-nala Kun. There's a pond there, a kunda there. So Dava-nala means forest fire. So Samsara Dava-nala Lita Loka, that these transmigration in the material world of birth and death is compared to a forest fire because it burns the living entity. It gives them so much pain. Section B describes the transmigration and how one who has no spiritual knowledge, vimudha, the foolish person, nanu pashyanti, Pashyanti Jnana Chakshusha, that the one who has no knowledge, the foolish person, can't see what's going on. And the one who has knowledge can see this transmigration. Then, in the next section, we'll go over that in a little more detail. But it's better because, you know, if I get derailed in the middle of what I'm saying, so it's better to raise your hand. Then in a pause, I can call on you. I can acknowledge that you have something to say. So then, section C describes not only can the one in without knowledge, he can't see transmigration, but Krishna is everywhere, he's maintaining everyone in the material world. Now this is a very, in my mind, sweet and esoteric point about section C, and we'll discuss it in more detail when we get to it. But how Krishna, he also can't see that it's Krishna who's maintaining everyone through so many different opulences. Then, after describing that, Krishna, in the last verse in section C, is a very famous verse, Savasya Chaham Ride Sanavisto Mata Smita Gyanam Aponam Chave Descha Savara Hameva Vidyo Vedanta Krit Veda Videva Chaham. Krishna describes that he is the knower of the Veda and the compiler of Vedanta. Is that to have it right, or is it the knower, the compiler of Vedanta and the knower of the Veda? Vedanta means the end of the Veda. Veda means knowledge, the end of knowledge. So that's the Vedanta. So after describing as part of section C how he is the knower of Vedanta, in section D, Krishna actually gives a summary of the Vedanta Sutra, which concludes, almost summarizing all the knowledge of this chapter, of the Yoga of the Supreme Person, concluding that the living entity should surrender to Krishna and sava bhavena bharata. He should serve him in all respects. So why don't we now go over, after getting a brief overview of this chapter and how the sections fit together, we'll go over it again, but in a little more detail. Section A. Remember, the connection with the previous chapter was that which binds us to the material world and under the control of the modes of material nature is attachment. Therefore, detachment is the subject that's going to be spoken about. Because if we want to get out of the material world, there's no way around this point. We're going to have to become detached from all varieties, subtle and gross, of material sense enjoyment. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, it is said that there is an imperishable banyan tree that has its roots upward and its branches down, and whose leaves are the Vedic hymns. One who knows this tree is the knower of the Vedas. So, while you were doing your quiz, Leonardo da Vinci came and drew so artistically the banyan tree of the material world. Now, just as the banyan tree of the material world is upside down because its roots are upward and its branches are down, because it's because the reality, it's only a reflection of the real tree, which is situated in the spiritual world. And this tree is situated on the desire of the living entity, just as the reflection of the tree is situated on water. One's material position is situated upon his desire. So then, after saying that this tree exists, and if any of you or all of you hopefully are familiar with a banyan tree, especially an old banyan tree, they're incredible. One can't tell where the tree started, where it ends, because the branches turn into roots, turn into trees, and then further branches turn into further roots and go down into the ground and then grow up into other trunks. And you can have banyan trees that are acres and acres in size. And you can't tell where the beginning is. It's very complicated, completely complicated and entangled within itself. So this is the situation of the material world. It's extremely complicated. But the closer one gets higher in the towards the root of the tree, which is the reflection of the bottom of the spiritual world, the more advanced one is materially, and the closer one gets to the leaves over here, the further away one gets from the spiritual, even though it seems superficially like it's higher in the tree, it's actually lower because it's a reflection. The living entity's position in his transmigration, so this is a different drawing than we used 2 days ago of the boxes to describe our the living entity situation. This one, the living entity in his transmigration, trying to taste the fruits of the tree, is moving from branch to branch. From branch to branch to branch, higher, 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 lower, 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 lower. And the modes of material nature are nourishing his position. He's trying to enjoy, but what he really wants is to get out, to get into the reality where the fruits are real, the enjoyment is real, but he's stuck on the tree of the material world, hopping from branch to branch to branch, thinking that the next branch will be the one that gives me the fruit that I am looking for, that will satisfy me. The branches of this tree extend downward and upward, nourished by the three modes of material nature. The twigs are the objects of the senses. So depending upon where the person is situated on the tree, he has different types of sense objects. And according to the modes of material nature, ignorant the different combinations of the modes of material nature that influence a particular part of a tree, the sense objects or the twigs will be of a certain variety. So traveling from branch to branch to branch, thinking he's making progress, but just simply entangled in this incredibly complex network of the tree of the material world. This tree also has its roots going down, and these are bound to the fruit of actions of human society. The real form of this tree cannot be perceived in this world. If one is within the complex of this banyan tree, not looking at it from outside, but as one is within it, it's so vast and complicated, one cannot understand actually what the totality of the tree looks like. The real form of this tree cannot be perceived in this world. No one can understand where it ends, where it begins, or where its foundation is. But with determination, one must cut down this strongly rooted tree with the weapon of detachment. Thereafter, so one has to stop being attached to jumping from branch to branch and to enjoy the fruits of this tree according to the modes of material nature. Thereafter, so that detachment is necessary. First we have attachment, then we have detachment. To get out, you have to have detachment. Thereafter, when one is detached from matter, one must seek that place from which, having gone, one never returns. And there, surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, from whom everything began and from whom everything has extended since time immemorial. Now, what is the process of the complete process of this yoga, of going to the spiritual world, not only stopping in the Brahman, but actually surrendering to Krishna in the spiritual world? That's described in five. This is the process of surrender. Those who are free from false prestige, illusion, and false association, who understand the eternal, who are done with material lust, who are freed from the dualities of happiness and distress, and who, unbewildered, know how to surrender unto that supreme, the Supreme Person, attain to the eternal kingdom. So there is the material world, the banyan tree. We have to get out. This is almost the introduction to this chapter and a continuation from the previous chapters. Now, Krishna explains further the goal of this yoga, because that living entity is eternal. Although he's on this temporary tree, he's eternal. And where should that eternal entity be? That supreme abode of mine, where he should surrender and go to, is not illumined by the sun or moon, nor by fire or electricity. Those who reach it never return to this material world. So that's already been explained several times in other chapters. So Krishna is giving a glimpse of the spiritual world where we belong. And it mostly has to do with eternity. That it's eternal. But of course, we know from other scriptures there's a lot more detail about the spiritual world. But anyway, that's where the living entity belongs. But instead, what is he doing in the analogy of the tree? What is he doing? Right, good. He's hopping from branch to branch to branch. And what do we call that, hopping from branch to branch? Transmigration or samsara. Good. Now Krishna explains the point that I just mentioned, that we are actually eternal. We don't die when the body dies. We're not born when the body is born. The living entities in this conditioned world are my eternal fragmental parts. Due to conditioned life, they're struggling very hard with the six senses, which include the mind. Now, the mind has been mentioned in the sixth chapter, especially, as essential in the yoga process, controlling the mind. Because the mind is the key of what? Attachment. The mind is the central position of attachment, and this chapter is very much about attachment and detachment, and attachment again onto Krishna. But the central focus of this is the mind. So therefore, because the mind's business is to accept and reject things, ultimately it has to reject material and accept spiritual. Because that's the mind's business, and that's the struggle that goes on with the mind. Therefore, it is given so much a strong prominence when any type of yoga is described. So the living entities in this conditional world are my eternal fragmental parts. Due to conditioned life, they are struggling very hard with the six senses, which include the mind. This is explained a little further. The living entity in the material world carries his different conception of life from one body to another, as the air carries aroma. Such a nice example. The air doesn't have anything to do with the aroma, but when it passes over the fragrant garden, the air smells so nice. And then when it passes over the garbage pit where the stools and where the stool is and the pigs are, it smells terrible. But that smell, that fragrance, isn't the quality of the air. It's actually the quality of that it's in contact with. So similarly, the example given here is that the soul, according to what it contacts, and what's going to determine what it contacts, its modes of material nature, its mind, the mind's desires. So whatever the mind is attached to, it brings it. The mind carries the living entity to his next situation. And he's quitting his body and taking another. And he seems to be, the air is sweet, the air is foul. But it's not the air, it's the quality of the aroma of what it's gotten touched with. So similarly, the person, the soul, doesn't have anything to do with the particular material situation. Maybe a fragrant mode of goodness situation, or maybe a foul mode of ignorance situation. But the soul itself doesn't have anything to do with that. It's just picked it up. And the mind is the magnet that has attracted the situation. It all depends on the mind. And that's explained in the next verse. The living entity, thus taking another gross body, obtains a certain type of ear, eye, tongue, nose, and sense of touch, which are grouped about the mind. Adishtayam manaschayam vishayan upasevate. Manaschayam adishtaya. It's all grouped around the mind. That's why the mind, the particular body, the eyes we get, the ears we get, the tongue we get, the taste we get, everything that we get, sense of touch, all has to do with the mind's desire. Therefore, the mind is so important to control. And therefore, it's the central issue in any practice of yoga to control the mind. So let's backtrack a little bit. The living entity is on the tree of the material world. He's in this temporary situation, going from higher to lower, having good body to bad body, good body, bad body, good body. All are bad. All are inauspicious. He's eternal, though. And he belongs to the spiritual world. But, second section, he's just transmigrating in this situation based on his mind, his mind's desires. And then, based on his mind, he gets a body, and based on his body, Vishdayan Upasevata, he enjoys a particular set of sense objects. If you have the desire to eat stool, you cannot eat it in your present body. So therefore, based on that glorious desire, you will get a pig's body. If you have the desire to fly, to hang glide, which is a new fad or an old fad in the last 10, 15 years, hang gliding. When you go up, jump off a mountain and you have these wings, and therefore, and then why undergo the trouble of having to put these, tape these artificial wings on? Based on that desire, be a bird. Or scuba diving, living under the water. Why take the trouble of having to refresh and fill up your air tank again? Become a fish. Eat meat, become a tiger. Like this. So based on the mind's desire, he gets his gross body, which gives him his particular set of sense objects. Then, 10 and 11 start a little bit of a different tact on the same point. The foolish cannot understand how the living entity can quit his body, nor can they understand what sort of body he enjoys under the spell of the modes of material nature. But one whose eyes are trained in knowledge can see all this. Contrast. Here is spiritual truth. Those who are in ignorance can't see it. Those who are in knowledge can see it. The endeavoring transcendentalists, those in knowledge, who are situated in self-realization, can see all this clearly, how the living entity is transmigrating, controlled by the modes of material nature based on his mind. But those whose minds are not developed and who are not situated in self-realization cannot see what is taking place, though they may try to. Now the phrase that if we stick in right now that makes all this, the next section, section C, clear, is not only can't they see transmigration, these vimudhas, these people who have no knowledge, they cannot also see the splendor of the sun, which dissipates the darkness of this whole world. Krishna says, it comes from me. They can't see that. They see the sun, they see the transmigration, but they don't really see what's going on. Similarly, they see the sun, but they can't understand that it comes from Krishna. Krishna said in a previous chapter, it is his eye. And the splendor of the moon and the splendor of fire are also from me. Now, here are more opulences of Krishna. Why Krishna has told these specific opulences? Because are we dependent on the sun? Are we dependent on the moon? Are we dependent on fire? We're completely dependent on Krishna, but we see these things separate from him because we are vimudhas. We don't see Krishna in them, but we're completely dependent on Krishna. He's maintaining us. And look at these opulences, how we are, that Krishna has chosen to say. They are ones that we are completely dependent on. That's the message that I understand of these opulences, the ones he has chosen to reveal here. I am the fire of digestion in the bodies of all living entities. We're completely dependent on that. We could eat all we want, and if the fire of our digestion is out, you're right. I enter into each planet. And by my energy, they stay in orbit. We're dependent on Krishna's energy completely, or else the whole planet would fall. I become the moon, and thereby supply the juice of life to all vegetables. Not only is Krishna supplying the vegetables and making them tasty, but in the next verse, I am the fire of digestion in the bodies of all living entities. And we're completely dependent on him in that way. And I join with the air of life, outgoing and incoming. We're completely dependent on him with that, to digest the four kinds of foodstuffs. I'm seated in everyone's heart. Now Krishna is going to take this. We're completely dependent on him there, because from him come remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. We think of Krishna only giving us remembrance, but Krishna, if he didn't give us forgetfulness, if we remembered everything that we ever come in contact with, our brain would be so crammed with information, we wouldn't be able to function. So therefore, we're very discriminating in what we remember. Remembrance is a discriminating process. That's coming from Krishna. Otherwise, we'd be swamped. If at every second we were remembering our third grade teacher and everything we learned about soil, plants, everything that every person's name we ever knew, every football score. Imagine if all this information was like swamping us at every minute, every math equation, like that. So Krishna, we're completely dependent on him for forgetfulness. And especially if one follows the Vedas to get elevation. By all the Vedas, I am to be known. I am the purpose. Krishna is directly stating it here. Indeed, I am the compiler of Vedanta, and I am the knower of the Vedas. Now, people don't understand this, that Krishna is that. How is Krishna the compiler of Vedanta? Because Srila Vyasadeva is his incarnation, and he's compiled it through Srila Vyasadeva. So people don't know that of Krishna, but he is that. Now, Krishna starts explaining, after explaining in that section C, his position and how people don't understand him and they're completely dependent on him, he explains Vedanta Sutra, starting on that point, using the opportunity that he just mentioned Vedanta, he starts describing Vedanta. There are two classes of living beings, of beings, the fallible and the infallible. In the material world, every living entity is fallible. That's all those folks down here. And in the spiritual world, every living entity is fallible, infallible. There are two kinds, chara and akshara. Then Krishna introduces the third kind. Beside these two, there is the greatest living personality, the supreme soul, the imperishable Lord himself, who has entered into these three worlds, and he's what? Maintaining them. So Krishna explains here directly and clearly, without the examples, that he is the one, Vivart Avyaya Ishwara. He is the controller, he is the maintainer of these worlds. He is maintaining them as the super soul. Three types of living entities. And it's very interesting. When it describes the chara, the akshara, the infallible, it's actually this kutosto chara uchate, that the infallible are ones that are one with Krishna in desire. That's the quality that one needs to be in the spiritual world. One has to be harmonious with Krishna in desire. That means we have to be detached from the material world, and therefore Krishna in the beginning has said surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Give up our independent desire to be the enjoyer. So that's the state of infallibility. One has to accept his position as the servant.
It's very clear here. We might argue on the concept of the thing that soul and super soul are one, but here it's becoming completely clear.
Yes.
Krishna is outside the modes, and he's
right. Because I am transcendental, 18, beyond both the fallible and the infallible, and because I am the greatest, I am celebrated both in the world and in the Vedas as that Purushottama, Purusha, Uttama, the Supreme Purusha, the Supreme Person. So remember in the 13th chapter, it was Purusha Para. There was Purusha Prakriti Stohi, and then Upadrastanu Mantachar Bharta Bhokta Maheshwara, Paramatmeti Chaputo, Dehes Men Purusha Para. So he is the Supreme Person. So he is that Supreme Person within everyone's heart. So then, whoever knows me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, first you have to be detached, then you have to become kutosto. What does kutosto mean?
One with desire.
To become one with Krishna's desire, one has to become detached from the material world. Otherwise, your desires are very different from Krishna's. You want to be the enjoyer. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhaktiya Uchate. That One has to use his senses instead of his sense gratification, but in Krishna's service. So, one who knows me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead without doubting is the knower of everything. And therefore, when one is detached and knows Krishna's position and knows these three people, he therefore, he knows everything. Sasava vid bhajante mam, and bhaja means worship in devotional service in all respects. In full devotional service to Krishna, O son of Bharata. And then the last verse, because Krishna has mentioned about the Vedanta and the Vedas, and there's so much mention of Shastra. Very nice verse. This is the most confidential part of all Vedic scriptures. And because this is the most confidential part, Prabhupada can enter this confidential part into the more esoteric parts that Krishna is saying. He puts this in. Because this is the actual conclusion. This is the actual confidential part. That one should sasava, he knows everything if one surrenders to Krishna completely in all respects. This is the most confidential message of the Shastras. Krishna's already said that by saying, Veda vid Vedanta Krit Veda Chaiva Aham. And, O sinless one, because one can only understand this if he's sinless, and it is now disclosed by me. Whoever understands this will become wise, and his endeavors will know perfection. This is the yoga of the Supreme Person. So breaking the attachment, therefore becoming one with Krishna in desire, understanding that that Krishna is the all-powerful one who's maintaining us anyway, become one with Krishna with desire, serve him and surrender to him in all respects. This is the conclusion of all the Shastras. This is the Shastras. This is what all the Shastras are bringing into this point, whether they bring us to the point of the Vedic scriptures by taking us through all the different rituals, etc. This is what we're ultimately trying to do. Break the attachment, know that we're dependent on Krishna, and fully surrender to him as one's knowledge increases. This is Purushottam Yoga, the yoga of the Supreme Person. Okay, are there any questions? Another few minutes.
Text 16, the spiritual world is infallible, like Brahman realization. And then we have Paramatma realization, that Supreme Soul which has entered the three worlds. And then Bhagavad realization, I'm the Supreme Person. And then who realizes that he engages in Bhakti Yoga.
Nice realization. This chapter is so glorious. That those three verses, starting with Dravimau Purusha Loke, what number is it? 16? That it talks about Brahman realization, becoming one with Krishna in desire. Then the next verse, Uttama Purusha Tvanya, talks about there's another person, is Paramatma realization, who's and then the third, Pratita Purushottama, he is called the Supreme Person, Bhagavan. I am that person. Because I am transcendental to both the fallible and the infallible, I am known as the Supreme Person. I really found it interesting that discovering that the opulences that Krishna mentions were ones that maintain us specifically, and then Vivart Avyaya Ishwara, I am the maintainer. Then he says it directly later on. It's such a subtle. It's nice. Dharmastri Prabhu, you had a question or comment?
In the Kutastha, it doesn't say anything in the translation about desire.
We're one with Krishna, but if you know the confidential knowledge, you know in what sense we become one with Krishna.
It doesn't even say that.
What?
Kutastha means that which is steady.
It says in oneness.
In the second chapter, So what exactly is the question? You're making a comment or a question exactly? Okay,
Now,
where did I get that from?
Well, I'm just a little confused because it doesn't play a prominent role in the translation.
It's Buddha.
What?
Buddha, not Buddha.
Hmm. Is there a Hindi word like that? What does it mean? Kutasta, in oneness.
Yeah, but look in the translation.
But that's the infallibility of the soul. He's one with the Lord in desire.
Oh.
That's his infallibility. That's why he's infallible. Because he's one with Krishna in desire. There's no other way to become infallible. That's purity. That's the Brahman platform, at least. You're not trying to enjoy the material world.
It's the same word as Annapurna.
Anu?
Annapurna.
For both and Buddha, we make this Annapurna.
Anukuta, for Govardhan.
Anna.
Anna grains.
Rice we make from the one heap. That's called Kuda.
Koda?
Kuda.
Kuda.
Kuda. That's the word, Kuda Stra.
Stan means steadiness.
Situation.
Any other questions or points? Devaki and then Janmashtami.
The question
you asked,
yeah.
That's what I was thinking. I mean, if someone wrote down envy of Krishna or something like that, it's all right.
But
I say it.
Because of
yeah, right. That's the root.
I put a joy in spirit.
Yeah, that's right. They're all right. But the one I was looking for was because they're all so intimately connected, the enjoying spirit, material attachment, and envy of Krishna.
Sorry.
Right, but that's the glory of devotional service, that it's all done in one step. That's the glory of it. And that's why if someone is in Brahman realization, unless he has the higher taste of service to Krishna, he will fall down, he must fall down. Why has the detachment become complete?
No, the body experiences some. You know, they feel more attached to Krishna because it's from all my mind.
Well, there's two different. I'd say that there's three different ways that can happen. One is the apichet sudaracharo way, where one, just by bad habit, and momentarily falls down. Then there's the Maharaj Bharat way, where one consciously makes a choice, an improper choice, misuse of free will. And then there's only two ways. And then there's someone who, I guess the one I was thinking of is the third one, one who harbors, although he becomes detached in many things, he allows and harbors certain specific weeds within his hearts of material attachment that later fructify and cause him lots and lots of trouble. So in all cases, the thing to do is turn up the heat on the fire of Krishna consciousness, which will fry the seeds of the weeds, and it will give us the higher taste even stronger. So therefore, we always should be increasing, understanding it's urgent to increase our hearing, chanting, serving, mood, everything, so we can become more Krishna conscious. I think we'll have time for your question, but so I don't forget it. Please read chapter 17. We left off at the point
16,
yes, thank you. I'm ahead. I'm so ahead, I'm behind. And come after you read it, be ready to tell me what the conclusion of chapter 16 is. What do you think the conclusion of it is? And keep that, you can make a reference of that conclusion with the conclusion of chapter 15, that iti guyatamam shastram, of what is this guya, this secret of all the shastras. And put that, and maybe you can make some comparison with the conclusion of 16. The conclusion, that last verse you mean? Well, the concluding verse I meant. That this is the conclusion of the shastras. Iti guryatamam shastram idam ukva maya naga. And I'm telling you this, O sinless one, because you are sinless. Okay. And whoever knows this, etad budva butimansya, he will become wise. Kritya kritya stibharata. And all his endeavors will attain perfection. But this is the conclusion of the shastras. Yes, there must be proof.
You started talking to us about how we would be the connection. There was one phrase in section B that would make it clear to us
that make
C was to cover.
Yeah.
But you never.
I did. Well, I said it. I just said it then. Good, say it. Yeah. Not only can't they see and understand transmigration, but they also do not see and understand that I am the splendor of the sun, like that. Not only that phrase, if we insert it there, not only don't they understand transmigration, even though the wise see it, they also don't understand the following. Follow? One last point. I'm going to tell you the schedule for the rest of the semester.